Well, this is the second week of our message series that we're calling The Chosen. It's all about making choices and who's really making them. You know, we make choices every day. We make some small choices like what we're going to wear or how we'll spend the day, when and if we'll pray or work out or watch TV and where we'll go after work or school. Sometimes we make bigger decisions like whether to get married or how many children we're going to have or what career to choose and where to live. Our ability to choose is what sets us apart from other creatures. Our ability to choose with a conscious understanding of our own free will. It's what defines us as human beings. But the central message of this series is that even though you make many decisions every day about a lot of things, the most important choices really aren't completely up to you. See, you are chosen by God. You are chosen by God to do the most important things, the hard things, the things that no one else wants to do in a way that only you can do them. It's the reason you're on this planet. You exist for God's purposes. And as we said last week in the first episode, one of those purposes is to reveal God's love. Being a religious person or a holy person, like we said last week, is not about following the rules perfectly. It's about love. And even though love always requires self-sacrifice, you are chosen by God to love other people every day in the best way you can. But being chosen by God also means you're going to have a hard road ahead. He doesn't choose people to go to Disneyland, much to my chagrin. He chooses people to go to the places in this world where his love is missing or in short supply. And that means the task is not going to be easy. People chosen to do something for God always struggle. They always face hardships. They're often unappreciated and frequently criticized. So why do they do it? Why do people chosen by God to do a hard and difficult job that nobody appreciates, why do they do it? Well, that's what we're going to explore in tonight's episode. And the best place to start with that, as always, is with the gospel passage. Here's what happened in today's story. Jesus was walking by the Sea of Galilee, and he saw two brothers, Simon, who was called Peter, and his brother Andrew, and they were casting a net into the sea because they were fishermen. And Jesus said, "Come after me." And they did. At once, they left their nets and followed Jesus. They didn't deliberate or really give the decision much thought at all. They were invited and followed Christ at once. The same thing happened a short time later. Jesus walked along from there and he saw two other brothers, James and John. They were sons of a man named Zebedee, and they were also fishermen. They were mending their nets in their boats when Jesus passed by and he called them. And immediately they left their father and their boat and followed him. The sons of Zebedee never asked for a brochure. They never requested time to think it over. They just dropped everything and followed. Now, to understand why they did not hesitate before making such a life-changing decision, you have to understand a little bit about their situation. You see, they lived in a region of Palestine called Galilee. You can see it on this map. It's in the very top portion of the map. It's about 100 miles to the north of Jerusalem, which is on the southern part, the bottom part of that map. Jerusalem was considered the center of Jewish religious life. It's where all the holy people lived. It's where all the religious elite lived. That's because the temple was there. And they looked down on the people up north in Galilee. They looked down on them because, well, they were just, you know, common people, simple farmers and fishermen. They looked down on them also because they had a checkered past. You see, about 800 years earlier, That territory around Galilee had been invaded and conquered and overrun by people from an empire to the north called the Assyrians. And the most educated and influential Jews were deported, while the peasant population was left behind. And the people who remained there ended up intermarrying with the Assyrians. And in the eyes of everyone in Jerusalem, that made the people up in Galilee impure. It made them inferior, like half-bloods, you know, they were half-Jewish or less than half-Jewish. And that's why Isaiah, in that first reading today, he refers to Galilee as degraded. He calls it a land of gloom, populated by people who walk in darkness. But what's fascinating is that while the people in Galilee were the first to experience the darkness of exile and conquest, they were also the first to see the light of Christ, because he launched his ministry there in Galilee. And as Isaiah said, on those dwelling in a land overshadowed by death, light has arisen, and that light was Christ. But what's also interesting and little known is that despite their low social status and poverty, the people in Galilee were some of the most religiously devout Jews in the world. Their synagogues were vibrant and alive. The people were serious about their faith. They kept Torah more diligently than most other Jews. And they were fairly well educated for the time. At the age of 4 or 5, boys and girls would start school at the village synagogue. They were taught the Torah, the first 5 books of the Hebrew Bible. They learned to read and write scripture, and by the time they were 10 or 12, they knew large sections of scripture by heart. And then most of the boys, at the age of around 10 or 12, they would learn the family trade, like becoming a fisherman, and they would often be married by the time they were 18. But a few of the most promising students would go on to study under a famous rabbi. They would often leave home and travel with that rabbi for several years at a time. These students were called Talmidim. They were the best of the best, like the top 1% at Harvard or Stanford today. They were totally devoted to their rabbi. They watched him and they tried to imitate him and become like him in everything. And students who wanted to study under a rabbi would often approach the rabbi and ask to follow him, and more often than not, they were turned down. They were turned down because to study under a famous rabbi was an extremely prestigious honor. Now, when you think about it, Jesus fits the description of one of these well-respected rabbis. People called him rabbi, for one thing. He traveled from place to place, preaching and teaching the people. He also seemed to be able to teach with authority, which was something that most rabbis could not do. Most rabbis were only qualified to teach the scripture, not to interpret it. But it seems that Jesus was able to do both. So, here's the upshot. When Peter and Andrew and James and John were invited by Jesus, a famous rabbi, to follow him, it actually was the chance of a lifetime. It just didn't happen every day that a well-known rabbi would walk by and invite fishermen with only a grammar school education to follow him. No wonder they jumped at the chance. But when you and I stand at the crossroads of some of the most important and fundamental decisions we have to make about our lives, the choice is not always so easy as it was for those disciples. Unlike Peter, Andrew, James, and John, most of us are reluctant to do something life-changing, especially when it's something we weren't expecting to do. I recently rewatched one of my favorite movies from the mid-1990s. It starred Richard Dreyfuss, a great actor, and the movie is called Mr. Holland's Opus. It's based on a true story. It's about a frustrated composer who reluctantly becomes a high school music teacher in order to make ends meet. The movie is set in the turbulent 1960s, and this man, Glenn Holland, he wants to do nothing more than to compose the Great American Symphony. That's his dream in life. But in pursuit of that dream, he and his wife experience an unexpected pregnancy that interrupts his plans, and he realizes he needs to earn some money to support his family. So he grudgingly falls back on a teaching credential he had earned a while back. And he and his wife agreed to save enough money over the next 4 years to allow him to return to full-time composing. But at every turn, his finances and the demands of teaching became obstacles to fulfilling that dream. And to add to his problems, Mr. Holland's own son was born not able to hear. He was born deaf, which means that he would never be able to share his love of music with his son. Now, in the early years of teaching, Mr. Holland hated it. He despised teaching. Both he and his students suffered from his rather half-hearted approach. But over time, as the movie develops, he reluctantly settles into the job and even finds some surprising ways to engage his students. Almost without knowing it, he begins to change many young lives and hearts through music. And after many years of a tortured relationship with his son, Mr. Holland begins to find a way to connect with him too. After what ends up becoming 30 years of teaching at the same school, remember, he had only expected to teach for 4 years, but he ended up teaching for 30 years. And after that time, the music program is terminated in response to budget cuts, and Mr. Holland is forced into early retirement. On his last day, he tells the football coach and his best friend what was in his heart. He said, "You know, I got dragged into this gig kicking and screaming. Now it's the only thing I want to do." And in a surprising and deeply moving finale, Mr. Holland discovers that the great symphony he had been composing all along, his true magnum opus, the real music of his life, were actually the students he had taught and the many lives he had touched in his 30 years of teaching. I would venture to say that almost every person who has ever done something great and important for God never thought they would be doing it. Whether it's serving the homeless or caring for someone with a medical condition, adopting or fostering a child, becoming a priest, teaching young minds and hearts, whatever it is, the people who ended up doing these things, they never set out to be heroes. They never thought they'd really be doing it. They just followed some nagging feeling deep in their heart. In fact, they may have been quite reluctant to do it at first, but over the course of the years, could not imagine doing anything else. You might think of yourself as an ordinary person. Nothing special. You work hard, you take care of your family, you spend time with loved ones, you're good to them. You're just like so many other people in the world. But I promise you, there is something you are chosen to do. And it will probably be hard, or intimidating, or exhausting. Maybe you're the only one who can keep peace in your family when everyone else is fighting. Maybe you've been thrust into the unexpected role of a caregiver for a spouse or another relative. Maybe you've been called to start a new ministry or a nonprofit. Some people do that. Perhaps you feel drawn to help young people in difficult situations or work to lift people out of poverty or addiction. Or maybe it's just something small and personal, you know, something you just know in your heart that you need to do the hard work to forgive someone, to exercise patience under pressure, show courage during a season of suffering, demonstrate kindness in a time of turmoil, or remain optimistic even when things seem hopeless. Whatever it is, when the time comes for you to do it, when you've been chosen to do it by God, you will probably be reluctant to take that first step. You may take on the job unwillingly. The problems may seem insurmountable. You won't be able to pick and choose what you want to do. The jobs God chooses you to do always require long obedience in the same direction and total commitment. But all you have to do is take that first step. Like the disciples, like Mr. Holland, like anyone who ever did what God asked them to do. And if you keep going, step by step, moment by moment, you will find in the end that it was something beautiful, something noble, something you could never have imagined not doing, and perhaps the only thing you ended up really ever wanting to do in life. Despite all the hard work, all the difficult moments, all the points where you wanted to give up, looking back on it, you will see it was actually the chance of a lifetime. You are chosen. But first, you have to make the decision to follow. And the most important decision of your life will be whether you also choose to drop your nets and follow him.